with me as well, talking about even getting to a level of consciousness to where you're thinking about and reflecting about like important existential questions.
Yeah.
I think that'll be useful to a lot of people as well who are watching.
Yeah.
So not to dumb it down, but like to bring it down to like the level of 20-year-olds.
Very much
as well.
Like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much want to make it relatable and
relatable
for people, which is what the 5-step process is all about. It's how to actually
simplify.
Apply it, you know, into your everyday life. And
Yeah.
How it's going to make a difference for you at whatever level you're at.
Yeah. So for the absolute beginner as well, can do it.
Cool.
Yeah, well, you know, you may be an absolute beginner, but I guess, like, even as a beginner, you're Neo, I'm handing you the red pill. You're still going to want to take the red pill to have the experience.
That's
right. The bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, we're talking about acceptance and personal responsibility now. So that doesn't seem much a big deal. But then when you go total unconditional acceptance, total personal responsibility, that's a whole new ballgame. You know.
And the, like, what that looks like, what do you mean by total experience, like surrendering?
That's right. And so that starts to confront, you know, a person's ego, a person's, you know, is that real? Is that possible?
Yeah.
You know, and so that's you know, where the journey begins.
Yeah.
Because, no, we can't do it perfectly, but we can commit to it in a genuine and you know, full way. And the more we commit to it, the more it's going to transform our life. And so it's not about accepting ourselves perfectly or taking full, you know, responsibility for everything I think, therefore feel, say, and do perfectly. But it's believing that well, let's wind it back a bit. You know, those two principles unlock our potential of consciousness. They are the base principles of any path, wisdom path.
Responsibility and acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it's Christianity, Hinduism, you know, Islam, Buddhism, Taoism, you know, the Kabbalah, or the Jewish faith.
Because you studied those things, right?
Yeah. In an integrative way, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the teachings that, the deeper esoteric teachings that came my way was an integrative, you know, approach to all of that.
Yeah.
So that was quite an efficient way to get into all those streams and have gain a deeper understanding of how everything is all converging to one point.
Yeah. And because like a lot of people will, responsibility is important, but like also victim culture is pretty big right now.
Yeah, and personal responsibility, that's its power. It cuts straight through that.
Yeah.
And so it's like the big revelation that is the red pill is that you are 100% responsible for or in control of your suffering. Now that does the ego mind's head in, you know, but it confronts every aspect of our conditioning that says that they made me do it. While I'm saying they made me do it, I have no control over my own mind. I cannot master my mind if I'm blaming somebody else.
Yes.
Or what I think, therefore feel, say, and do.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean I know how to master my mind. That doesn't mean when I turn around and look at my mind, I have the foggiest idea what to do with it. But I'm not going to learn unless I look at it and own it.
That's right, yeah.
It's like with anything, you know, if I want to be a craftsman, I've got to totally own my craft. I've got to devote myself to that craft and focus on it. And where this is about the craft of mastering our own mind.
Yes, yeah.
You know, so if I'm going to master my mind, I've got to take total ownership of it. If I'm blaming you for what my mind is doing, then
that itself takes
never going to master it.
That itself takes a level of consciousness to be at, because the way you're saying it is like you need to treat your mind like a career progression, say at work or whatever. You have to work as if you're working towards something at work, but with your mind and your level of consciousness the same way. But most people who are just going to work and coming back home aren't even thinking about that.
And therefore...
What's the need for it, you know?
Well, ultimately the purpose is to overcome suffering.
Yeah, but a lot of people think overcoming suffering means earning more money, so that it provides you with a sense of security, external validation.
Yes.
So that the ego, I think, is safe, but in reality, they don't see the underlying issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So therefore, those people simply need to get on with... You know, we need to get on with our material life and let that evolve us. Because what I've come to learn is there's nothing that happens in this world that isn't evolving us in some way.
Yeah.
Everything is ultimately your spiritual path.
Yeah.
Even if you see that or not, everything is, tests you, challenges you.
Yeah, yeah.
The shift is where Neo breaks out of the matrix is that you come to realize that there is no power out there. All the power is in here. Everything that your mind, every circumstance and condition is summed up by your mind, by the meaning your mind is placing on those circumstances and conditions, which constitutes your own personal reality.
Yes, yeah.
So, there's 8 billion people on the planet, there's 8 billion different personal realities. But they're all common enough where we're all more or less on the same page. But...
yeah.
In regards to general humanity, that page is 51-49% insane.
Yeah.
Hence all the suffering.
Yeah. That's why everybody's got a different lens which they look at the same thing with.
Yeah, which for most part enables us to function.
Yeah.
In a way that we feel is good enough to have a meaningful life.
Yeah.
But occasionally, we hit the wall due to having, difficult conditioning, which keeps getting us caught in mental patterns that continually creates the same issues all the time.
Yeah.
Which again points to the fact that I'm perceiving things in a certain way according to my conditioning. Therefore, I'm creating my own personal reality out of those circumstances and conditioning that is unique to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you're creating reality and you're creating your own problems, because the way you project yourself onto other people, they'll respond the same way. And
so most of us are doing that without even realizing it. We just take it for granted because it hasn't run us into a wall too many times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the suffering in terms of becoming truly consciously aware tends to be a very important catalyst that life has to wake Neo up out of the matrix.
Yeah. Yeah.
My suffering was chronic depression. That's not totally necessary for everyone. Some of us come in with a very strong intuition and intuitive knowing that cannot be snuffed out, that you know, keeps driving them to certain revelations, and that breaks them out of the matrix. But for most of us, suffering, or a combination of the two. I had a combination of the two. I had the suffering, but I also had the intuition.
Yes. And other cultures, like, that promote that more than other cultures?
I think every culture that gets established, whether it's, you know, the Great Roman culture, or, you know, a native, you know, forest culture, you know, they're older than the Roman Empire ever got, you know.
Yeah.
And they all found their own ways to that.
Mm.
You know, psychedelics.
Yeah.
Has been in virtually all cultures. Egypt had it, and they used a snake venom. Used that as a tropic, psychotropic drug. That was one of their things.
And how long does that work for before they?
Who knows? But you know, it's like anything, like DMT. That's been used for centuries.
Yep.
That it is found in nature in all sorts of ways.
Joe Rogan talks about that a lot.
Yeah. And mushrooms and you know, all those things. So many of the great revelations that led to the great texts and wisdom teachings probably came from that.
Yes.
You know? And so people breaking out of their individual mind into a more collective consciousness where higher knowing is.
Yes. And a lot of people say, like, we're all a collective, our consciousness are all pulled in together at the very highest level of a person or consciousness. What exactly does that mean?
I found that, to me, the path to that awareness and that feeling, that knowing, was the path to me. And this is a very common thing throughout the teachings of the ages, and you find oneness through becoming one with yourself. So with my chronic depression, I was, you know, suicidal, and the only way I could overcome it was to learn to accept myself unconditionally. And I was fortunate enough to get into a program that taught me that.
Yeah.
And I also had an intuition that got switched onto that quickly.
Mm.
And so acceptance, when you accept yourself, it enables you to turn around and face yourself.
Mm.
The reason why we don't face ourselves, I've found through experience, is two main reasons. One, we hit a wall of fire of unconscious self-judgment, self-rejection, that is just so layered into our consciousness.
Yeah.
So often we don't even know, but there's an existential dread there that forces, you know, that makes us not want to look at ourselves for too long. Like if you were to sit a person down and just sit there and make eye contact for an extended period of time, you soon start to feel those layers of discomfort because you feel that person's looking right into your soul.
Mm.
And so,
yeah. Does that go back to more primal instincts of like it being a threat to me? You know.
I think it. I don't know about that, but I certainly know in terms of conditioning. Just look at our own. So you've got that wall of fire of self-judgment.
Yeah.
But the other one is, if I'm putting all my focus on myself, I end up confronted by an abyss of emptiness.
Yeah.
A sense of being abandoned.
Mm.
That's when I've got a personality type that's very attached to people, very emotionally dependent on people.
Yeah.
And so I'm very outwardly focused, more like a feeling type that wants to be attached to people to feel whole.
Mm.
And so I'm used to giving to people.
Yeah.
in order, in the hope that they're going to give back to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And but in the process, I don't realise that I'm constantly abandoning myself.
Mm.
I'm abandoning myself. I will compromise myself to stay attached to you, for instance.
Mm.
And so when suffering drives, you know, if that's too out of balance, then, you know, we'll just end up having relationship after relationship that goes pear-shaped.
Yeah.
We attract abusers and things like that.
And then wonder why they're abusing us so much. But it's like you, your conditioning has basically forced you into it.
That's right. So when we try to put ourselves first, when we try to really look at ourselves, that's scary because we feel so alone. Because we, all of the, my attention of love is outside. I literally don't have the synaptic pathways that enable me to point that love toward myself.
Mm.
And so when I try, it's just, there's no love.
Yeah.
Being an issue, you know, it's just hits a,
nothing going
hits
in.
An emptiness, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's really scary too.
It is going in, but it's by an external measure that could be taken away at any minute.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so the mind literally becomes conditioned into thinking that love comes from
other people, yeah.
But yet it's not rational because I'm giving love to, I'm very good at actually giving love to other people.
Mm.
But because we don't stop and think about where that love is coming from.
Yeah.
Not like I go down to Woolies and buy a couple of kilos of love to give to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually coming from my innate ability to love. And so,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so we got to, again, wake up to what's going on and and learn how to be that love to ourselves.
Yeah.
And so that's where acceptance is so important, because that's the antidote to self-rejection.
Mm.
So that enables me to break through
yeah.
all those barriers to looking at myself. So when we look at ourselves, you know, where we are literally opening up Pandora's box, as that myth says, all of my potential is there, but all my self-rejection is going to come out and start beating me up as well.
And the self-rejection is a mechanism to protect yourself?
Well, ultimately it is, strangely enough. It's not rational because it's not put together by a rational mind.
Yeah.
That is all the ways that, well, as a child, you know, we were criticised and judged for not getting it right according to some, you know, standard that was in the family of origin or the particular culture that we continued to encounter. So as small children, we can't defend ourselves,
yeah.
you know, against those, because we don't have our own self-awareness.
Yeah.
We don't have filters, and so it's just all going in. Even though it doesn't feel good, doesn't feel right,
yeah.
we end up absorbing it. And so so you can imagine from the moment of birth, you know, to the time we're 18, we're being impacted on day in, day out, day in, day out. It just goes so deep.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't know that we're rejecting ourselves at the time. We think it's normal.
Mm. And it drives us to strive for excellence in other areas externally.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which can often compensate. You know, I'm great at business, but
that's
I'm shit at relationships. But I can deny that because I'm great at business. You know, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, a lot of my friends are that way.
Yeah.
Always need to prove. I'll give you an example. One guy was trying to ask a girl out, like a waitress at a restaurant that we were at. But instead of going and just being vulnerable with her, he had to take it in stages where he would try to prove to her that first he was rich, came from a rich family, and second, like he was, like his status at work and his career
yeah.
was in a good position.
Yeah.
And he ended up stacking chairs for her at the end of the night and ended up asking her out by the end of the night. But after that, he was very full of himself, thinking that my master plan is work. But at the end, I told him, like, it wasn't because you were rich or your status. It was because you were being a gentleman
yeah.
and you were being kind to her. Like, you could have skipped all of this processing. But in his mind, the conditioning is,
yeah,
I will get love because I'm rich. And maybe that's because
yeah.
there's low self-esteem.
Attached to a particular image, you know, to compensate for our lack of self-worth.
Yeah, self-image is huge. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is, because ultimately, you know, look at a 5 year old or, you know, anything under five. What does the child want most? To be merged with the parent. Not be around the parent, but literally being joined to the parent. That is wholeness, that is safety, that is exist for a child of that age.
Yes, yeah,
you can imagine how often that connection is fractured. You know, through often no fault of the parent. You know, the parent might have prolonged sickness, or you know, there may be a natural disaster, or you know.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. But the world, we are as human beings always on some level of vulnerability and fighting against that vulnerability.
Constantly. Yeah. So to sink into vulnerability and they improve the acceptance of yourself. Once, is it more of a, it's not going to come the first time you do it, but as you keep exposing, it's like exposure therapy for yourself.
Well, it's a continual growing thing. I mean, but what total acceptance, a commitment to accept yourself totally, and it takes a while to get that, because acceptance, acceptance, but you know, we don't comprehend how profoundly we've been programmed into not accepting ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and we go, acceptance, but all of, you know, and might expose this bit here, but all of this, you know, is just still justifying itself and regarding itself as normal.
Yeah.
Even though all of that is causing us to suffer in ways that you know, most of society suffers, but calls it normal.
Yeah.
You know, which drives behaviors like, you know, insecurity, fear, greed, exploitation.
Yeah. And then when you're confronted with it, also you're reactionary to it. You're very sensitive. Like, well, a person who doesn't accept himself is very reactionary. Yeah.
Well, this is it. You've got all your self-judgments, and then try to compensate by blaming others.
Yeah. Blame,
you know, for that judgment. Or we judge ourselves, like I used to do, and
internalize it.
I would just implode because they would put me in a helpless, hopeless situation. And so we've got to recognize, in order to take that red pill, we've got to comprehend it to be a radical, unconditional acceptance. It's only radical because the mind has become so conditioned to not accepting itself and thinking that's normal.
Yeah.
But anyone out there who is really resilient, that functions on a very high level, that, you know, already has that radical self-acceptance, you know, shit happens to them too, but they don't add it up to meaning that means I'm unworthy in some way. They just doesn't, they're not egotistical, they just don't have that program.
Yeah.
They just have the natural understanding that I'm just worthy because I exist. You know, what else do I need to do? And that's the level that we need to get.
But people will say, you know, if I can accept myself the way I am right now, what does it need to grow? What does it need to...
Well, because, you know, I can't accept myself as I am right now. So what we're doing, what the self-acceptance does, is initiate me starting to observe myself. I'm starting to pay attention now to all the ways I don't accept myself. And I also help the person understand that you will know that by the way you suffer. And so this is where the personal responsibility comes in.
Yeah.
Magpies are having a lovely time out there. We've got a family of them out there.
So, chasing people around. Yeah.
Beautiful serenading. And so the personal responsibility, you know, is putting myself in the position to be the parent of my mind.
Yeah.
Like a parent of a 2-year-old. If a 2-year-old's running around a party, for instance, fighting everyone, you know, who are they going to look for? They're going to look for the parent of the 2-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, hey, your kid.
Yes.
You know, it's your kid.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we've got to treat our mind like that, not like judge it like a 2-year-old, but understand that it's my mind. Now that I'm an adult, I'm now the parent of my mind. It's like we ought to have an initiation, which is what a lot of the old initiations in cultures are. You are no longer a child, you're a self-responsible adult.
Yeah.
And our whole system of law is built on that. And yet we still don't really accept it fully, you know.
Yeah.
And so that total personal responsibility means I'm no longer blaming my mind on other people, but self-acceptance means I'm not to blame myself for being human either.
Yeah.
But I'm here to take full responsibility for it. So it takes a while to join those two together, to the ego, it often seems like they're opposites.
Yeah.
Personal responsibility seems like a judging thing. Oh, that's a really heavy, you know, that's...
Yeah.
But it's not. That's actually freedom.
Yeah.
It's the key into my power.
Well, that's the thing. Some people, when they say you need to take personal responsibility, it's like they're blaming you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it hurts their ego.
Yeah.
And they close up and they end up firing back at you.
That's right. And so, and all that's done is stimulate their own self-judgment.
Yeah.
And
they're saying, this is where I feel sensitive about myself.
Yeah, that's right. And so blaming others is no different to blaming myself.
Mm-hmm.
Both are going to destroy my power.
Yeah.
And so this is why total self-acceptance, total acceptance ultimately, you know, we start with total self-acceptance because it's easier to relate to.
Yeah.
But acceptance is, the root of acceptance is unconditional love. This is what brings people together. You and I can't have a relationship unless we accept each other as we are. To the degree that we don't, there's going to be a wall between us. There's going to be separation.
And there's also boundaries there as well, I suppose. But the fundamental level of any relationship is just, first of all, the acceptance.
Except there is no relationship without acceptance on any level. Look at it internationally. If I don't accept another culture, how can I have a relationship with that culture?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, so that's number two of your five steps, right?
The personal responsibility is two. But really they're the foundation steps.
Okay.
So the acceptance and personal responsibility, as it says in one of the Buddhist texts, they're the two wings of the one bird. In the Buddha's Eightfold Path, they're the first two steps. They're called the wisdom steps. The other six are there to figure out how to live the wisdom steps.
Yeah. And then what would be above that?
How do you mean?
The next step after those two fundamentals?
Well, ultimately, on one level, there is not a next step. That will take you all the way. That's the red pill. But of course, we've got to, you know, learn how to live those two steps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so getting back to why am I taking the red pill in the first place, usually is to overcome my own suffering.
Yeah.
And so personal responsibility tells me that my mind is creating my own suffering, which is hard to comprehend it, you know, a lot, because it can be so complex. But it takes time. But our commitment to those two steps is going to be teaching us all the way. And so this is, we require a fair bit of faith. And why it often involves a person, and this is the mysterious factor, the person usually requires a level of intuition around this, a sense of knowing, yep, that feels right. Not everyone has that.
Yeah, but everyone can develop it.
That's a big question. That's an interesting question. I believe everyone will, but can they in this particular time they have in this life? Not everyone can.
That's scary.
It's not a judgment. It we're all, we you know, we're adults, but on a consciousness level, we're all children. We don't start growing up just because we have an adult body.
Mm.
And so, in my experience, that journey of growing up is a long journey.
So, to those with more material wealth, do you think they would have a harder time digging into consciousness or awareness because, you know, the world's already filled up with everything that satisfies the ego? It's harder to break into.
It can be similar to abject poverty, which keeps you occupied as well.
In victimization?
Just simple survival.
Okay.
You know, you don't have time to gaze into your navel. You're trying to find the next mouthful of food, you know?
Yeah.
You're trying to survive.
Yeah.
That's why monasteries became about, because, you know, to get people out of the hand-to-mouth survival into, you know, somewhere that they can be supported so they can concentrate on gazing at their navel.
That's interesting, yeah. But it also prevents you from reaching that sense of consciousness that you deserve, I suppose.
What are we talking about? Poverty or wealth now?
Abject poverty.
Yeah, because we just don't have the time.
Yeah.
You know, we're scratching for survival. And there also is all the conditioning of I'm not particularly worthy, you know.
Mm.
Because I'm left out by society. It's that disconnection thing again.
Mm.
All suffering ultimately is caused by us feeling we're disconnected from life in some way.
Yeah.
But ultimately, because we become conditioned to that thought, we're actually disconnecting ourselves from life.
Yeah. Your conditioning is causing you to disconnect from life, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But wealth also gives you the illusion that you're superior.
Mm, yeah.
Plus, you can afford the best doctors and the best drugs and the best alcohol, so you can keep running from yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, now, like the Michael Jacksons, for instance, end up dying of some sort of drug overdose, often prescription drugs.
Yeah.
Because you can keep taking that to avoid facing that abyss or that wall of fire. So.
Is that... That is common in Western culture, right? You'll overprescribe instead of internally, well, trying to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Well, yeah, it's the lack of understanding of these two principles, the lack of faith. Even in psychology, yes, those two principles are, again, a foundation of mainstream psychology. But the understanding of the ultimate fundamental power of those two principles isn't there.
So, why is that? Why did they not involve this?
Well, I'll give you a reason for that. Unconditional self-acceptance comes from unconditional love. Now, look at unconditional love for a start. I mean, how many of us have experienced unconditional love in a dependable, sustainable way in this world?
No. Hardly any, yeah.
You know, and so most of the population don't even believe unconditional love is possible.
Mm, it's a fairy tale.
You know, so there's an issue with science. Okay, but the most profound way that you get to experience unconditional love is learning how to love yourself.
Mm.
Not in an egotistical way, because this love isn't taking anything from the world. You're discovering that it's coming directly from a higher level of your own consciousness, where you can give from yourself to your own human self.
Mm.
So you've got this captive audience, this human child within you that you can love 24/7.
Yeah.
Learn how to love 24/7. Now something profound starts to happen there. And that is, you are becoming the very love that you're giving to your humanness.
Mm.
You're not just loving, you're becoming that love.
You're becoming it, yeah. Through giving it to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, what does unconditional love do? Connects us together. There's nothing we want more than unconditional love.
Yeah.
And when a child feels that unconditional love with his mother or father, or it's heaven.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's arrived. You know, it's.
Well,
and
I think,
so,
yeah.
But let's take this, that next step. So what are we with our parent in that moment? What are we in that moment of unconditional love with our partner, for instance? We're one with our partner.
Mm.
And so when we're loving ourselves in that way, we're becoming more and more love. We're becoming more and more one. What does one mean? There's nothing outside that oneness. So it's not just me and myself, it's me and you. It's me and the person on the TV starving in Ethiopia. It's me and nature. It's me and the dog down there. It's me and everything.
Mm.
We literally start to feel that, experience that. And then I start to realize that all these synchronistic happenings, when I've been searching for the answers with my heart in the right place, life is almost like reaching to me and I start to realize this interconnectedness of everything. And so we start to get spiritual, we start to get mystical, we start to get into the quantum field theory of life.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is where mainstream applicable science starts to freak out. It can't, struggles to manage things on that level.
It's almost as if they're trying to keep you down, you know? Like,
I don't believe. Well, to me, that's getting into conspiracy theories, and then you've been a victim.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that we don't get attached to our models or don't get attached to having power, and we organize and try to, you know, like corporations and that want to keep their power and they try to monopolize. Absolutely, but it's all also human nature.
Yeah.
Now, we want to be safe. We don't want to be airy fairy. We want to, you know, in terms of science, we want to have provable and so on, but then that ends up restricting certain areas of research. Like you try to, you know, in Australian psychology, on an academic level, you try to research things from a spiritual level and you'll be quite marginalized very quickly.
Mm-hmm,
that's not science, that's prejudice, that's bias. You know?
The evidence first has to be there for it to be prescribable.
So why is that there?
Yeah.
Because the only way to know oneness is to experience oneness. You can't reach it on an academic reasoning.